We're in Genesis chapter 31 tonight, and we want to continue our study of Genesis. We've learned a lot of things about that culture and about those people and about God's dealings with them. And it's amazing how we think sometimes we talk about the way God was in the Old Testament, and people think about Him as He was always vengeful and wrathful and is striking everybody dead left and right. But it's amazing how patient He was with some of these people. We look at Abraham and how long it took him to really develop a true faith in God. And when we look at Isaac and the struggles that he and Rebekah had in their family with the favoritism there with Esau and Jacob, and then with Jacob as he's deceptive of his tricking his brother and his father and all those things. And here we have him now. He's been with Laban for 20 years. He served him 7 years to get Rachel, got tricked, wound up with Leah instead, then got Rachel, worked 7 more years for her. Then they said, well, you know, what about the flocks? How about we'll work 7 more years for some of the cattle, for some of the sheep and the goats and those things. And so all of this time has been going on. And the last verse of chapter 30, in verse 43, it had said, the man, that of course being Jacob, increased exceedingly and had much cattle and maidservants and menservants and camel and donkeys, and that he was getting rich. And we talked about the fact that he still had his own inheritance to go back to from his father Isaac, and he was supposed to get 2/3 of that, but he had become wealthy on his own through working for Laban. But in chapter 31, things change. There's a change of tone. For 20 years, they've had a good relationship, Jacob and Laban have. Things have gone well. They've both benefited from it. They've both prospered. Laban got both of his daughters married off, and Jacob got one of the wives he wanted. And the other one, well, he got that one too. And then everything's going good, but in verse 1 it says that Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's has he gotten all this glory. It's an amazing thing. Sometimes with relationships, things can seem to be going well for a while. But then, just a few little whisperings begin. A few little words spoken behind the other person's back when they leave. And before long, people's good feelings towards someone have turned to harsh feelings toward them. And that's what happened in verse 2. Apparently Laban had been hearing what his sons were saying. Laban had a good relationship with Jacob. But instead of going based on his own experience with Jacob, he started to listen to other people. And in verse 2 it says that Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and it was not toward him as before. Laban used to have a good attitude toward him, but his outlook toward Jacob, his attitude toward Jacob had changed. That's what it means when it says his countenance wasn't the same. He didn't look happy to see him when he came. He was a little more reserved. He didn't talk like they used to. They didn't get along like they used to. And Jacob recognized things have changed. And his sons didn't feel the same way about Jacob that their father had felt. And his sons had influenced the father's decision about how things were going. He thought everything was going well until his son started pointing out, well, you know, that could have all been yours if you hadn't given, you know, you told Jacob he was going to get some of that. He's getting rich off of you. And he started listening to that. That's one of the reasons as Christians it's a dangerous thing for us to be in a position where we're listening to negative talk about another person. Because it can change our attitude toward that person, sometimes to our own detriment, as it was to Laban's here. But at this same time then, the Lord said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers and to your kindred, and I'll be with you. And so Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field, to his flock. And he said to them, I see your father's attitude toward me has changed a little bit. His countenance is not like it was. But the God of my fathers has been with me. He's always clear to point that out, that God's been with him through these things. And you know that with all my power, I've served your father. Now, Jacob seems to have learned his lesson. He was quite a trickster when he was younger, but now he's working hard. He's not the one doing the tricking anymore. Laban tricked him a little bit, but he hasn't tricked anybody else during these last few years, as far as we know. Things have been going better with him. He's been being more honest, and that's a good thing. And he says, even though he served their father with all his power, verse 7 he says, your father has deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. And I assume by the way he says that, that it didn't mean Laban was giving him a raise 10 times. He means, he keeps, he tell me this and then he tell me that. And he goes on to explain that. He said that this is the way it is. If he said the speckled will be your wages, then all the cattle gave speckled. If he said the ring stripe will be yours, then all the cattle would have the... And so he kept changing it back and forth when he started thinking, well, wait a minute. If I give him all the speckled ones, he's going to have too much. So I'm going to change that. No, it's going to be... And so he kept changing it around to try to keep Jacob from prospering. And yet God was with Jacob and he continued to prosper regardless of that. And that's what he says now in verse 11. The angel of God spoke to me in a dream and said, Jacob, and I said, here I am. And he said, lift up your eyes and see the rams which leap on the cattle are ring-streaked and speckled and grizzled, for I have seen all that Laban does to you. Now the Lord doesn't miss these things. Sometimes, and certainly some of the Psalms, and many times the prophets as well, say, well Lord, how long are you going to let this go? Don't you see what's happening to your people? Even over in the book of Revelation, the souls of those martyrs were under the altar crying out, Lord, how long? How long are you going to let it go? How long before you make things right? Well, the Lord isn't blind to these things. It's not that He doesn't see them, but He allows people's free will to carry them as far as they want to go. And He doesn't violate their free will. Well, then this angel continued to tell Jacob, I'm the God of Bethel. Remember that, where he saw the ladder, the stairway to heaven, and he called that place the house of God, and that's what Bethel means, the house of El, Elohim. And so here was, he said, I'm that God where you anointed the pillar and where you vowed a vow to me. Now, you get up and you go from this land and go back to the land of your kindred. Remember, Jacob was only going to be with Laban until Esau quit being mad enough at him to kill him, and then his mother was going to call him back. But his mother never called him back. Instead, here now, apparently after his mother is dead, because we read no more about her when he goes back home, God calls him back. Go back to the land of your kindred. And so he tells all of this about his dream and what the angel told him and all of these things to his wives, Rachel and Leah. And they say to him, well, is there any inheritance left in our father's house? They said, well, you know, we're not going to get anything from our dad. He's got sons. We've got brothers. They're the ones that are going to get the inheritance. We won't get anything. What have we got to lose? We're married to you now. Might as well go with you where you go. He said, are we not, they said, are we not counted of him as strangers? For he sold us and has devoured our money. And so they said, yeah, we ain't got anything to lose. He's not even acting like our father anymore. He treats us like we're strangers now. And then they go on to say, for all the riches which God has taken from our father that is ours and our children's, now then, whatever God has said unto you, do it. So God, they acknowledge that God is working in this. Now, when you read that, you might think that, well, Rachel and Leah believe in God like Jacob believes in God, like Abraham had believed in God. We've got to realize how weak their faith at this point really is. Even though Jacob had talked about back at Bethel. He made those vows to God about what he was going to do. We've seen him not fulfilling any of those vows. We haven't seen anything in all this 20-some-odd years that he's been here with Laban. We haven't seen anything about him really worshiping God, offering sacrifices, giving that tenth of everything like he had promised God he would back at Bethel. He's not doing it. Where's his faith? He's kind of waiting around. Now, God's finally spoken to him and said something to him to wake him up a little bit. Now, it's time to go. Well, verse 17, then Jacob arose and he got his sons and his wives upon the camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten. The cattle of his getting, which he had gotten. And it makes it very clear. He took his cattle. He didn't take Laban's. Remember, they had a deal. He was watching Laban's cattle. But he didn't take them. He took his cattle. His sheep. And so Laban went to shear his sheep. And Rachel, here again the idea, you know, Rachel talked about whatever God said to you, you'd think that, oh, this is a family that's worshiping God, but notice what Rachel does. While her father is gone to shear the sheep, she goes into the house or tent of her father and steals the images that were her father's. And the King James says images. His idols, his household gods, is what she stole. Now, they had their own little idols that they had set up in their house that they worshipped. And she went and stole them. Now, that seems like an odd thing for somebody to do if they worship God, to go and steal some idols. Why would they want idols? Now, I know sometimes they made these idols of silver and gold, and you can melt them down. They'd be, you know, they can be valuable and various things. But why did she steal those idols? I have to wonder about her faith and what she really believed about God versus what she had believed and practiced in her father's house in this idolatrous worship that she had been involved in, to know about these idols. She had to have been involved in it, or she wouldn't have known there were any idols in his house. She had to know something about that. And so, she stole them. Well, Laban, of course, was gone. Jacob took off. Jacob didn't know what Rachel had done. Nobody else, apparently. She did it all by herself. She didn't have any help with that one. She snuck in there and did it. And so they took off. Laban didn't know. Nobody told him. But then, on the third day, so they were gone for 3 days before Laban found out. It was told to him that Jacob has fled. And so he took his brethren with him, and he pursued after Jacob 7 days and caught up with him. Now here again is the way that God worked during that time, different than the way he does now. We've already seen Jacob has this dream, the angel speaks to him, God speaks to him in a dream through the angel of the Lord and all these things. And now we see God coming to Laban in a dream. Now remember, Laban's an idolater. Laban doesn't worship God. He worships these idols, the ones that Rachel has stolen. But God still comes and speaks to him in a dream. And there are many cases throughout the Old Testament of God speaking to people who were not his people. God spoke to Pharaoh. He spoke to Abimelech. Again, later in Joseph's time, he's going to speak to Pharaoh. He's going to speak to Nebuchadnezzar in a dream. God worked in different ways during those times than he does now. But he came to Laban in that dream and said to him, be careful that you don't speak to Jacob good or bad. Now, you better be careful what you say. Watch out. And Laban then overtook Jacob, and Jacob had pitched his tent here in Mount Gilead. And they caught up with him, and Laban finally comes to him and says, what have you done that you have stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and didn't tell me that I might have sent you away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp. He said, we could have had a big going away party. Why'd you have to run off? You act like somebody that came in and kidnapped everybody. Oh, these are my daughters, these are my grandchildren, and you just took off. Why'd you do that? And you haven't suffered me or allowed me to kiss my sons and daughters? Now, his sons, of course, Laban's sons weren't going with Jacob. When he says sons here, he's talking about his descendants, his grandchildren. So he's really talking about his sons and his daughters. He said, you didn't let me kiss them goodbye. You just took off with them. And now, you've done foolishly in so doing. He said, it's in my power to hurt you, but the God of your father spoke to me last night and told me to be careful how I spoke to you, not to do good, to do evil, do anything bad to you. He warned me about that. And so, notice Laban didn't say, my God, or the God of my fathers. He said, the God of your fathers. And he recognized this wasn't his God that was telling him this. This was a different God, one he was not real familiar with, apparently. But one that he knew had been being with Jacob and watching over him all that time, and prospering Jacob, and that he had benefited from it, so he listened to what God said to him. And so he says then, he said, fine that you needed to leave and you wanted to go to your father's house. You longed to go to your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Now, you know, that says something about a god. That's a pretty pitiful god if he can be stolen by somebody else. No, you go pray to this God to protect you and to help you, and he can't even protect himself. He's just a little statue that... It's always amazing. I've seen some of these statues that they have in the Far East. You know, they worship these things. You know, they take them and they bathe them, and they want to feed them, but since, of course, they're idols, they're statues. You can't feed a statue. So they have somebody that eats for them. You know, and they lay it down in bed, put it in bed at night, and they treat it like it's a baby doll or something, you know, like it's a baby. But this is supposed to be their God. How can you serve and worship a God that could be stolen by somebody else? How's that God going to do anything for you when he can't even do anything for himself? What kind of God is that? But that's the kind of God Laban had. It's the kind of God that he served. But he says to Jacob, you know, I'm glad, you know, you wanted to go back home, that's fine, but why'd you steal my household gods? Why'd you steal my gods? And so Jacob said to Laban, remember, Jacob didn't know anything about what Rachel had done, so Jacob says to Laban, well, I left because I was afraid, because I thought you would take your daughters from me by force. But then he says in verse 32, with whomsoever you find your gods, let him not live. Oh. Wonder if Jacob would have said that if he'd have known that his beloved wife, Rachel, was the one that had stolen them and had them. I mean, she was the one he loved dearly. He wouldn't want to lose her. But his confidence that he hadn't stolen them, and he didn't think any of his family had done this. You know, we've got to be careful making promises. But he says, let him not live. He says, before our brethren, discern what is yours that's with me and take it. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And so Jacob basically says, you can search everybody and say, if there's anything that's yours, you take it back with you. And if whoever stole those gods, if anybody here's got your gods, then we'll put them to death. They won't live. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, went into Leah's tent, went into two maidservants' tents. He didn't find them. he went out of Leah's tent and he went into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had those images. She had those idols. And she had put them in, the King James says, the camel's furniture. She put them in the saddle bag, basically. If you know what an old saddle bag is, that's where she put them. And she was sitting on them. And so Laban searched all over the tent and didn't find them. And she said to her father, "Don't be mad at me that I can't get up in front of you, for the custom of women is upon me." This is probably the first time that a woman used her monthly cycle as an excuse for something, as recorded anyway. She said the manner of women, the custom of women. In other words, she said it's that time of the month and I can't get up right now. And he accepted that, and he didn't find them, of course, because she was sitting on them. And she used that as an excuse. She made up that story. As far as we know, it wasn't true what she said. So not only did she steal the idols, then she lied about that as well in order to get to keep them. And so he goes back out, and Jacob's angry with him now. Because here he searched all these tents, and he didn't find anything that was his. And so Jacob gets angry with him. And Jacob says to him, "What's my trespass? Or where's my sin that you have so hotly pursued after me? You searched all my stuff. What have you found that was yours? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren and let them judge between us." Of course, Laban didn't have anything to set down there. There wasn't anything to judge. It was obvious Jacob hadn't taken anything that belonged to Laban. And the things Rachel had taken weren't found out. And then he says, 20 years I've been with you. The ewes and the she-goats have not cast their young, the King James says. They haven't miscarried. The rams of your flocks, I didn't eat them. You know, I mean, that's one of the things. When you're a shepherd or you run a ranch, you got cattle or whatever, I mean, one of the benefits of that is you get to eat it. But he said, I haven't eaten any of your rams. I haven't eaten any of these things. Your cattle, they gave birth. There wasn't any problem. They didn't miscarry any of them. Look at how blessed you've been during these 20 years that I've been with you. Oh, you think about what he said there. That they didn't cast their young, that they didn't miss. That's an amazing. In 20 years, if you know anything about sheep and cattle and things, for 20 years to not have any of them, and he says it as though not any of them ever did. That's an amazing feat. That's an amazing thing that none of them ever did. Certainly, God was with Jacob during this time. And then he goes on to say in verse 39, "Whatever was torn by beast, I brought it not to you, I took the loss." In other words, I didn't make you pay for it. If one of them got killed by a wild animal, I didn't make you pay for it. I took the loss on that. "Of my hand, you did require it. Whether it was stolen by day or stolen by night. In the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. And this is the way I've been. For 20 years in your house I served you, 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your cattle. And you've changed my wages 10 times. And unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely you would have sent me away empty. But God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and he rebuked you last night." He said, God warned you because he knew what you would do. He knew you'd come and take all of this away from me if it was left up to you. He rebukes Laban pretty strongly. You know, that's a dangerous thing. In the New Testament, we're told, be not unequally yoked together with an unbeliever. Because you can't trust him. See, Laban wasn't a believer in God, and so you couldn't trust him to keep his word. Now, that's not to say that there aren't some people that call themselves believers that aren't trustworthy. Now, there are some of those, too, that are hypocrites. But he says, you got to watch out. When you're with an unbeliever, you don't know what they're going to do. Don't get yoked together with them. And that's what Jacob was in. He was in this mix with Laban. And no telling what Laban would do. Laban was selfish. He was out for his own good. And he didn't care what was going to happen to Jacob or even his own daughters. He wasn't concerned about them. Not really, not deep down. And so Laban answered and said, These are my daughters, and these children, they're my children. The cattle are my cattle. You see, he's forgotten. No, they're not your cattle. You gave them as wages to Jacob. You paid him that. It's not yours anymore. How would you like that? If your boss had given you a check on Friday, and you came back in the next Monday and he said, that money that I gave you Friday, that's my money. Wait a minute, I worked for that money. I earned that money. You paid me that. That was my wages. That's not your money. But that's what Laban says, see? He says, those cattle, they're my cattle. Those dogs, they're mine. The children, they're mine. No, they're not. See, he gave his daughters to Jacob. They became Jacob's wives. Their children were their children. Now, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be love in the family, and that they shouldn't enjoy that, and that he wasn't their grandfather, and those things should have been. There should have been a good relationship there. But what about those cattle? Those aren't his cattle anymore. But here's what he goes on to say. He says, and all that you see is mine. What can I do this day to these my daughters, or unto the children which they have borne? Therefore come and let's make a covenant, you and me, and let it be for a witness between me and you. And Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap, and they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Jegar Sahadutha. Don't you love some of those good old words? That is the heap of witness. That's what he called it, the heap of witness. But Jacob called it Galeed, which just means the heap. So Laban had named it, and of course you see the difference in those two terms. One of those was a different language even than the other. And so Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and you this day. And the place is called Galeed. That was what Jacob named it, not what Laban named it. And so it was the heap. Well, I don't imagine you could find that heap now. It's interesting how often just a pile of rocks was used as some sort of a symbolic thing to remind people of an event. Remember when the children of Israel crossed over Jordan, they piled up a pile of stones. One stone for each of the 12 tribes of Israel. And that was supposed to remind them of where they had come from and where they were going. And they were supposed to even tell their children and their grandchildren about that from years to come. These things were supposed to happen. Well, we have those things too. We don't call them heaps of rocks. We call them monuments. You know, there's the Washington Monument. There's the Vietnam Memorial, there's the Lincoln Memorial. We've got all those kinds of memorials and monuments that help us remember those events in our history. And they help us to remember that. Now ours probably last a little longer and are a little easier to keep up with than a pile of rocks. I can only imagine going back to this 50 years later or the children coming back and saying, okay, now let's see, was it this pile of rocks over here, or was it this pile of rocks over here? Which pile of rocks is it that we were supposed to be remembering here? It'd be difficult sometimes, because a pile of rocks can get grown up with grass and things pretty easily. Of course, somebody else might come along that lived there, and they might move that pile of rocks. They might decide to build a wall with it, and you wouldn't know where the pile of rocks went. Those kind of things happen. But they used those all the time. Just as Jacob had stood that rock up and called that the house of God, he calls this the heap, Galeed. He also, as well as heap, he calls it the heap of witness, but he also calls it the watchtower, or Mizpah. And so he calls it that as well. And so Laban and Jacob made their amends there, and they made their covenant at that spot. And Laban said to Jacob, "Behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I put between me and you. This heap will be a witness, and this pillar will be a witness that I will not pass over this heap to you, and you shall not pass over this heap and this pillar to me for harm." I said, we're never going to go past this to try to hurt each other ever again. It's a non-aggression treaty, is basically what they signed here under these circumstances. Verse 53 is a very interesting verse. In the King James, the word God is capitalized in all three places. But I don't think that all three of them really should be capitalized, because he says, "The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." Sounds to me like Laban's mentioning three different gods. The God of Abraham was one God, and the God of Nahor, and the God of their father. Remember, Abram left his father's house, and he went in search of and following the voice of the true God. There's no indication that his brother Nahor or his father Terah worshipped the real, true, and living God. And I wonder about that in this passage here, these different gods mentioned. Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called the brethren to eat the bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them, and Laban departed and returned to his place. It's a good thing when you're able to resolve your differences, even at times where there's a disagreement, and even at times where you have to go your separate ways. If you can resolve your differences so that you can depart in peace, which seems to be the case here. How much better would it have been if Jacob had just said to Laban, "Look, you know, I've been working for you all this time, but I can't work for you anymore. I've got to go back home to my family, and I'm going to take my wives and my children. We're going to go, and we'll come back to visit you at Thanksgiving and Christmas." You know? But they didn't do those things like that. But instead of trying to sneak away, if he had let Laban know, if there'd been some communication. Communication's a good thing. And it can be very helpful. And when they finally talked it out, everything worked out. They were able to go their separate ways in peace. We need to work in our relationships to try to have some peace, to try to reconcile our differences. Even at times where we finally decide, hey, we just need to go our separate ways. You know, that's what Paul and Barnabas did. They had a pretty sharp contention between them, and they finally said, you know, we're not going to resolve this. You go your way, and I'll go mine, and we'll both keep working for the Lord. And they both did. They both kept working for the Lord. And that's the way. Now, there are a lot of times with church members, churches and preachers, and I hear both sides of it. You know, I hear congregations talk about this preacher or that preacher. I hear preachers talk about this church or that church, and they went this way and that way, and they split. How much better it is when they leave on peaceful terms, and there's not any hard feelings left over. That's so much better, and it's a blessing when that can happen, and that's what happened with Jacob and Laban. Now, I don't run across Laban anymore. But Jacob now, we're going to keep following him a little further next time. But notice the things that are happening here. His favorite wife is still attached to these idols. She still hasn't truly converted to worshiping the true and living God, even though she's now been married to him for 13 years. She's been married to him. And yet, she's still hanging on to some of those old traditions. You know, sometimes we think that when somebody becomes a Christian, they're going to suddenly give up all of those sinful ways, all of those false things that they thought about religion or whatever it may be, all those bad habits are going to just disappear. It doesn't work that way. It takes time for people to grow and learn and grow some more and learn some more and grow some more. It takes time for us. We need to be patient with each other, but we also need to be encouraging each other to keep growing and keep getting closer to what God wants us to be. I don't know all about Rachel and her life. I don't know how she felt or why she did what she did. The Bible doesn't tell us. It just records the facts that she did those things. But you know, the Bible in the New Testament speaks highly of her. Talks of her as though she were one of the righteous. I have no reason really to doubt that, but you just see the difficult struggles of growing that take place with somebody. It's not just a switch that you can just turn it on and turn it off. Growth takes time. And it's a difficult struggle sometimes to grow like we should. We have some growing pains sometimes when we have to give up things that we weren't ready to give up yet. We have to give them up and get past that. Tonight, if there's something in your life that you haven't given up, maybe you've still got an idol that you're hanging on to. And I don't mean a literal physical idol, but maybe there's something in your heart that you hold dearer than you hold the Lord. You need to give it up. It's only going to hold you down. It's only going to hold you back. It's going to keep you from reaching the heights that you could reach. If you're here tonight and need to respond to the invitation for any reason, please do so as we stand and as we sing.